Hi, this is Dan Reimold. I'm talking right now with Doug Brown, a journalism master's student at Kent State University and an enterprise reporter with the student newspaper, The Daily Kent Stater, which is under the larger umbrella of KentWire.com, the fantastic student media hub at KSU. In recent weeks, Brown has earned national media attention and a ton of praise from the journalism community for his reporting on a story involving the criminal past of a planned big-time university donor. So, Doug, first, thanks so much for talking with me for a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, you're currently nearing completion on, if I understand correctly, a follow-up story or a set of stories. And I wanted to start there, in part because we're going to link the timing of this podcast and related story feature on College Media Review on the day that the story breaks or that the story series begins, but also because I saw you had mentioned fairly recently in a local TV news interview that, as cool as all this attention has been, in many ways, you do believe in the mantra that you're only as good as your last story. And so this will soon be the one that will be, in that, earning that mantle. And so I'm curious if you can talk to us a little bit about what you've been up to and what you are nearing completion on right now.
Basically, for the past couple weeks, I've been doing just a series of records requests to get the unanswered questions that came from this. I got all the emails from Jason Cope, the donor, to the athletic department, and I have everybody discussing it on emails. So there's a lot of questions that will be answered in this article.
What were some of the questions that you feel had remained unanswered in the initial reporting, and then obviously with the media hysteria that then surrounded it? What did you still want to know?
Basically, who in the university knew about it, and then for how long they've known it. I found out that that the donation was actually made 11 months ago, and then the university is still contending that they knew about it since before the donation was made. So they've known about it for almost a year now, at least.
As you look through the emails, what else is being revealed? If it's something you feel comfortable talking about, that, again, we're going to keep closed hold until the story series begins.
Yeah, basically, I think one of the main things that has come out of this, that the athletic director and the university fundraising person who presented the resolution to the board of trustees, they knew about it before the trustees meeting, yet they didn't mention it to the trustees, and the trustees had no idea about the guy's past before approving it. And I had emails of trustees emailing fundraising staff after the article came out asking what the policy was on background checks. So basically, they basically misled the board of trustees into approving it without their full knowledge of the real situation.
And to make sure I understand, so the bottom line here, at least from what you're finding in the documents through the messages, is that if the members of the athletic department and other administration officials knew about this guy's past, it was not something they were sharing with the board of trustees when asking for approval on the donation specifically and the idea of naming the basketball court after him?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
This was my records request. I got the recorded audio from the Board of Trustees meeting.
Hmm.
The court stuff was exactly two minutes long. There weren't any objections to it, and there weren't any serious questions asked by the Board of Trustees. And I had the background information presented to the Board of Trustees with that document. And it actively, under it says, if there's any alternatives or consequences to passing this resolution, it says there are none. So they're actively hiding the guy's past.
And so, when you had provided the summary to Romanesco for his blog in the wake of the attention the story started getting, you would mention that in talking with, and forgive me if my memory's off, either the athletic director himself or one of the athletics officials, they had mentioned that they had known about this. You said he kept repeating the phrase 10 to 12 years ago, didn't seem to grasp what a big deal that it obviously had become. They've since released that four-sentence statement. They're not commenting on it. Do you now feel with this new data and the things you're going through, do we have some actual wrongdoing? Is this something that you feel comfortable? Is there some kind of evil or, you know, some definitely kind of, you know, potentially damaging behavior being done from the athletic department or other administration officials?
I think the main thing here is that they didn't tell the board, and I have an email from the athletic director basically emailing the athletic department fundraising guy and the other head guy in the athletic department, like basically bragging that the board didn't ask any tough questions.
Hmm.
And then I basically the statement that the athletic director gave me in my interview, I actually have dozens of emails from them discussing what they would tell the media.
Hmm.
And then that basically what he told me was exactly what they had been discussing for weeks.
From the practical perspective for the student media staffers and advisors and profs who are listening in, was it as simple as an open records request to get these emails, to get the audio of the board meeting? You know, what went into that? I'm actually impressed. You seem to have gotten it fairly quickly.
My first records request was on January 10th, which is my article went on online on January 6th and in print on January 9th.
Okay.
So my first records request was for all emails to and from all emails about Jason Cope, mentioning Cope Court, and then all emails corresponding with Jason Cope from the athletic department staff. So when I finally got that in, like, 2 weeks later, it led me to more emails, like, corresponding with the head university people. So then I reflected their emails.
Okay.
The same stuff. And then stuff that they were talking about in those emails, like documents, like the background information for the board, then, like, the designs for the courts, I was able to get those because they're talking about it in the emails.
Okay. At this moment, what it might be a few days before the story runs, do you feel that the administration has a proper knowledge of potentially the gravity of what the revelations in your story are going to do? I mean, do you think heads are going to roll? Do you think they're planning a PR statement somewhere? You know.
Actually, I've been able to get some of their internal communications about it because I've staggered my records request. So my other records request will review, like, have them talking about how they're going to handle it. And basically everybody's refusing to talk on the record. Nobody's going to talk, and I let everybody know what I have of theirs and, like, what I'm going to publish, and everybody's refusing to talk.
Do you think heads are going to roll? You know, kind of bottom line with this, do you think this is the type of story that, if not getting quite the same amount of attention as what obviously has been this unique first story that the media has really pounced on, do you think this is going to be explosive?
I don't know, because the people who really make the decisions already know.
Hmm.
It depends on how much public outrage there is, because, I mean, the Board of Trustees already knows what I'm writing about.
Yeah.
The administration, all the vice presidents know what I'm writing about. So pretty much everybody with power to have heads roll has already knows about it.
You know, this has obviously become, your story. I've been fascinated, you know, and especially hearing right now some of the details that you're bringing up, that even just through a records request you're able to have, that suddenly is going to expose a lot to KSU, you know, people, and also the outside public. Are you surprised that more national media is not paying attention to this or even trying to beat you to the scoop? You know, are you surprised the New York Times isn't lurking around and trying to dig in somewhere? It kind of sounds like it's just you who's about to break this. It's kind of interesting. You would think it would have been a follow-up story for a lot of media outlets.
It really is just me. I my records request have shown, like, all the local news, the newspapers that have been interested in it, because they'll all talk about, you know, what's expected to come out in the media in their emails.
Mm.
And it's pretty much just the Akron paper, the Akron Beacon Journal,
yeah,
and the Cleveland Plain Dealer, but they have not been talking about it since the article, the brief articles they wrote after my article came out.
Mm. Mm. All right, so take us back for a couple of minutes here for people who are late to the party and want to know a little bit more about what's going on here. First, in a general sense, one thing I'm impressed by, the Daily Kent State, a great paper, and I've been a fan personally of the Kent Wired media hub for a long time. The paper specifically has an enterprise staff of reporters, you know, not even a sort of lone reporter. I think it's unique to me among, many, student media, maybe not at the very, very top echelon of the daily papers we all know about, but, among the many, many smaller outlets. Describe just in general what's going on with this team and what's sort of your role as an enterprise reporter.
Yeah, basically there's about five or six of us. We meet with our the editors on every Sunday at 5, and then we'll discuss what the plan is for the next 2 weeks, and we can there's really no timetable for when our articles need to be in. Like, I've been working on this for weeks now, it's just really fortunate that I'm allowed to just spend so much time on one article.
Yeah.
We're basically out of work for however long we need. We just have to let the editors know.
So to say this is sort of the story of the year in college media so far, I think makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels with the attention it's gotten, with the significance and what has played out because of it, I think in a good way, but also because it literally, according to your correspondence with Romanesco, literally started for you on the first day of the new year, or at least that is when the story took a turn that you knew was going to be interesting. I was curious if you can just talk about sort of the beginnings of how you got involved with it.
Yeah, I actually got an email from our web editor, Brad Tanzi. He emailed me on January 1st, actually. So yeah, I was in Chicago for a New Year's party, so that I was going to go back to school on the 2nd. So that's basically when I started working on it. I actually, in my records request, I actually was not the first reporter to ask about it. The local newspaper, the Record Courier, had asked about it on December 21st, but they chose to kill the story. I found out.
Did you ever find out why or what that would have been about? That's interesting.
Yeah, I actually called the publisher of the paper, and he said he didn't want to hurt the relationship between the university and a donor.
Huh. Okay. That actually wasn't the way I thought your sentence would end. I thought you were going to say that the university and the paper. That's interesting that he was looking out the university and a donor. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, and he said he was waiting for somebody else to break it first, because if the Record Courier got it wrong, as it's close, he said the university will never forgive us.
Okay, so enter Doug Brown and the Daily Kent Stater. I like at least that works to your advantage, I guess, in some ways. You attacked this thing, for a number of days before the semester had even begun. Are you a financial records expert? You're dealing with things like the SEC documents, the FINRA. Were you just sort of diving in and learning as you've gone, as you were going, or, talk a little bit about dealing with what I think for a lot of students would be an intimidating set of acronyms and documents?
No, I'm not specifically financial, but I've been, ever since I started grad school here, I started in fall of 2010. I've taken, law classes and stuff like that. So, I really like digging into public records. I've done a lot of stuff with, NCAA records. I've got results of, positive drug tests, beer sales in the football stadium. I've gotten a bunch of things through public records requests, but, I hadn't done anything in terms of financial records or anything like that.
Right. It's one of those things that, if they ever make a movie of this, it might be difficult to kind of pinpoint that crescendo of music, amazing moment of, kind of discovery, as it's the sort of dorky piling through records and looking online and scrolling. Did you have any sort of cinematic type moment of kind of stumbling onto a certain fact or the specific background in which you suddenly knew, okay, we've got it, that this is going to be a story?
Yeah, basically, the SEC has a pretty open website, so their website is really easy to find financial information and stuff like that. But basically, I was able to find another fact that this guy was continuing to sell stocks for companies even after he lost his license. I found that basically a couple days after he began looking on the SEC. Hmm. And then basically matching up the birthdays of the donor and stuff like that, and just to find out it's actually the right person first. So
yeah. And then after that, you confirm the criminal history is, you know, is there and you believe accurate and factual. What was the next step? You know, where does it kind of go from there?
I called the SEC and I worked with the media person there, Judy Burns, okay. And just talked about what I was trying to look for and just trying to get them the most accurate, accurate depiction of what happened. And then she was really helpful. And, in helping me find, the court summary from the United States District Court and stuff like that. And she was really helpful.
Okay. And then it became about, at least partially, trying to get Jason Cope, the million-dollar donor who was going to be, lending his name to the basketball court, to try and give you some sort of feedback and some sort of quote that could be used in the piece. What went into attempting to track him down?
Okay, so basically, I checked out. I knew in the press release it said that he had, he's the owner of some golf courses.
Okay.
So I tried to call and email through the golf courses, and then no response. And then all listed numbers online were, I actually found out through the Cuyahoga County Auditor's website that he had just bought a house last year. In a subdivision of Cleveland, So all the numbers listed for his houses elsewhere weren't going to be working anymore,
okay.
And then that number was not listed. So I went to that house to try and find him, but he wasn't there.
Was there literally? It was you knocked on the door and no one was home, or couldn't get in through a gate or something like that.
No, he wasn't in his house. There were construction crews there. I was talking like his. There's nobody else's car there. And then the construction guy said he hadn't been around all day.
Mm.
And then I actually tried to get in touch with him through the athletic department. Wouldn't give me any contact information for him.
Okay.
But the record showed that they actually did forward my information to him once I asked them.
No, that's interesting to me because, again, you had mentioned in the Romanesco rundown that, they said they would do that. And I admit I read it without any sarcasm or cynicism, I read it with a little bit of skepticism, that they would have actually done that. But I guess that's one thing that they can hold.
They actually did that and actually had emails of the athletic director saying that he warned Cope that I would probably be looking for him right after I interviewed the athletic director.
Okay.
So he had been warned twice, and then that's actually withdrew the donation in an email to the athletic director about a couple hours after the athletic director warned that the athletic director told the communications person that he had warned Cope about me.
What did the email actually say? I'm curious. Was it just a short message?
Yeah, he basically said, I warned Cope of this reporter's interest in the story, and he put the story in quotation marks.
Okay. And then what was Cope's response? Just, okay, I'm done? What did he actually say when he pulled the donation?
I can see if I can pull this up.
Yeah.
I have hundreds of pages of emails looking through.
While you're looking for that, just out of curiosity, I think probably a question a lot of people would be interested in. If you were able to track him down, if you found him in the, in the right mood, right spirit, he was willing to answer a couple of questions and you had just a moment to fire them off. What would you be most interested in knowing, from him? What would you want to be able to ask him face to face if you could?
I was planning on asking him, if it was actually discussed among the university. And when it was actually discussed.
I was really
curious about how he was able to, make enough money to be able to throw $1 million around.
Yeah, yeah. After his past troubles, certainly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I actually answered that question in the emails I have. He's
he's still quite involved in a lot of stocks. And the donation was actually a transfer of stocks.
And he's allowed to do that? I guess that's legal at this point for him?
Yeah, he's an unlicensed broker, so he can't be employed by brokerage firms.
Hmm.
But he's still allowed to, like, you know, buy and sell stocks on his own.
Were you able to come across the email maybe saying when he actually pulled the donation?
Yeah, I have it right here.
What does he say? I'm curious.
It says, "I am very sorry to inform you that due to an unforeseen change in my personal situation, I will need to cancel my gift to the athletic department.
Mm.
I hope that the situation here changes going forward, and I will keep you informed if it does."
My only and exactly kind of maybe what you would expect. My only curiosity. Are there other messages that you were able to obtain between him and various administration officials? Is that like the most formal that he had been? Was it kind of all of a sudden he was hunkering down, or is that kind of his regular language?
No, he was very open with everybody in his emails. He mainly communicated to the athletic department fundraiser guy. They seem to have a very close relationship. They would call each other, you know, bro or bud and stuff like that.
Okay.
Then he actually sent an article to the athletic department fundraiser guy on January 3rd, like 2 days before he pulled it. He sent an article from the New York Times that was published in February 2001. He's basically trying to clear his name, I guess. The article said that, you know, his partner was the main guy in it.
Hmm.
But the article was published 5 months before the case even closed.
Huh. So it's just the interesting aspects continue. Okay. Huh.
And then he didn't bother to appeal his suspension.
Huh. Okay.
And then he was officially barred because he didn't appeal his suspension.
You know, in a larger sense with all of this, one of the blog posts that you link as one of the outlets sort of providing coverage of your reporting when all of this broke and went big made a lot of speculations about whether you were going to have hell to pay, you know, from the school or members of the KSU community, you know, on the Monday after the story broke on Friday. And I was curious, did any of that ever, you know, in any way come true for you? Have you faced, you know, any sort of critical feedback, you know, along with obviously the praise you've gotten in a larger sense?
To be honest with you, I've received no negative feedback from anybody. And it's not even, like, there's really nothing that they could say. Like, I didn't use any speculation or anything. Like, I think literally every statement in my article was according to some document or according to this litigation.
Mm.
So there's really nothing I could really say about it. Like, I didn't pull the money. Like, the guy pulled the money.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, and that, I was curious in a related sense, you've at least symbolically become known as, you know, the man who's cost Kent State, you know, $1 million. And obviously that seems to be written in a positive sense, or at least it's buffered by a positive description right after. And I'm curious, have you sort of formulated a basic response to that when people kind of joke with you or bring that up, you know, to you about that?
No, not really.
Okay.
I really don't know how I feel about being the man who caused $1 million, but, you know, it's just what happened.
Yeah.
It's weird, like, as a reporter, like, kind of getting and being in the story somewhat. It's weird from that standpoint, but no, I haven't really had a response to that.
Do you think my second to last question here, do you think the level of attention that has been paid to this story, and specifically your work, is related specifically to the idea of, wow, you know, a student media outlet, you know, or someone who is still in the journalism student ranks, even at the, you know, the graduate level, was able to accomplish this? Like, do you see that aspect playing out at all? And curious just in general what you think of the coverage that's been placed on you so far.
Yeah, I think if I didn't work for a student newspaper, like, I'm 23 years old. There's a lot of 23 year olds doing great work around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But if I didn't work for the student newspaper, I don't think so many people would care, because that's really part of the story, I guess, that the fact that I do work for a student newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't mind that, but I don't think there would have been so much coverage if I had been working for a regular newspaper.
Yeah. What are you most proud of, you know, from your reporting so far, and maybe even, you know, what you've been doing recently with the story that's about to break? You know, what do you hold up? What are you excited about personally that you've been able to do?
I really love getting public records.
Mm.
And I really love having those records, because the more you have, basically, the less you can be pushed around.
Hmm.
The university communications person who got wind of that I was writing a follow-up article wanted to schedule an off-the-record meeting with basically every vice president of the university and the athletic director, just to answer my questions, but it would have been off the record. And basically, I feel like maybe a little bit of an intimidation attempt, but I'm really proud of just basically getting records and not being able to, you know, be pushed around or lied to, basically.
I like that. And that's a perfect place to close out. Thank you, Doug, so much for your time. I appreciate this. And good luck with the rest of your work on this story that's soon to break.
Yeah, thanks for having me.